We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Today we get a chance to meet the rest of our radio broadcast team this fall. Jack Miller and Jason Avant, both two great Wolverines. We'll get a chance to talk to them next on In the Trenches.
Welcome to the official podcast of Michigan football, In the Trenches with John Jansen, presented by Meijer. The former two-time captain and national champion covers the Wolverines better than anyone.
The brotherhood that I have with the guys that I played with, but also the respect that I have for the university and how I learned that, it's not about me. And Coach Carr instilled that into me, and it changed my life. So I love being back at the University of Michigan. I can't wait to be a part of, calling the games.
This is In the Trenches, presented by Meijer. Once again, here's John Jansen.
One of the newest members of our radio team is former Michigan wide receiver Jason Avant, played in the NFL for Jason. How long was it? I know you were Philly for the majority of your career. Was it 8-9 years?
Yes, I was in Philly. So it's 11 years total, but I was in Philly for most of it, 8 years, and then a year in Carolina and 2 years in Kansas City.
Welcome to the team. I know that everyone is super excited to have you a part of this. I'm excited because you're going to bring a perspective that we haven't had on the radio broadcast, and that's somebody who is somewhere outside the offensive line. So welcome to the group, and thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me. And you're a legend in my mind. We always talk to the offensive line of when you played and Hutchinson and you and all the guys. So it's a pleasure to be on a podcast with you today. So just let you know that I respect you as a player for so many years and love what you've done off the field as well. So thank you for having me. And I'm excited. I'm excited to get in with you guys and learn from you as well.
Well, this has been a long time coming. And I've got to – this is an apology, a formal public apology because – and I'm hoping you don't remember the moment. But it was a Philadelphia-Minnesota playoff game. I was working for the NFL Network – recently retired, and I'm trying to figure out this whole deal. And I come into the locker room and I'm like, here's a Michigan guy, right? I'm going to go ask him a question. And I don't even remember what the question was, but I asked you one of the dumbest questions, and you looked at me and God love you, because I do believe you knew I was a Michigan guy at that time too. And you gave me a legitimate answer, but I want to publicly apologize for asking you the dumbest question ever known to NFL players.
Listen, I'm pretty sure it wasn't dumb. I can't remember the moment right now, but I try to esteem everyone's question. So,
well, I appreciate that.
It's a tough job, asking questions. That's a tough job.
So let's start there, all right? Because you're going to be the sideline guy for our broadcast. So we're going to hear from you. And occasionally, right, when dignitaries come back, say it's a Charles Woodson or Steve Hutchinson or, you know, whoever, Desmond Howard, you've got to ask questions. And this is how I go through it. Like, I write down questions, and then I go through them, and I think, you know what, if I was to ask that question, somebody asked it of me, like, that's a dumb question. It's hard to come up with legitimate good questions. How have you acquired that skill of conversation when you're interviewing somebody?
Well, yeah, over the years, being asked to do it, you know, for 97.5 here in the Philadelphia market and also NBC here, I've been asked to do some things on the sideline for the Eagles. So I try my best to keep it in a football perspective and know what type of questions would irritate a guy. So I kind of keep it, you know, broad enough where they can, you know, they can give me a good answer. But also, you know, Doug has been in my shoes, you know, so I'm going to, you know, piggyback off him and learn as much as I can. So I'm just going to try to ask tough questions, but not so invasive where a guy doesn't want to talk to me next week.
So tell us all what you're doing, because you're going to be in Ann Arbor on Saturdays or wherever the Michigan football team is doing. But what are you doing Sunday through Friday?
Oh, so Sunday through Friday, I run a trampoline park locally here. I'm a dad, you know, of three, so I'm taking my kids to activities and all those types of things. But also, I have two podcasts that I do. One is called Q&A. It's on Inside the Birds platform, YouTube, with Adam Kaplan, Greg Cosell, Jeff Mosher here in the area. You hear Cosell because that's Howard Cosell's son.
Yeah.
For many years. So we do a podcast throughout the week. I do two of those a week. I'm also have a hit with Barrett Brooks, who's an offensive lineman. You would know him, Steeler, and also Philadelphia Eagle. He's NBC Sports Philadelphia. We do that throughout the week television. I also do appearances, and I'm an ambassador for the Eagles, speaking to corporate sponsors. So I do a bunch during the week. So my week is pretty packed and loaded up. So that's what I'll be doing, and I can't wait to fly out to each one of these games and talk about what I love most, which is the University of Michigan, more than Philadelphia Eagles, more. And people would hate to hear that, but the brotherhood that I have with you know, the guys that I play with, but also the respect that I have for the university and how I learned that, you know, it's not about me. And Coach Carr instilled that into me, and it changed my life. So I love being back at the University of Michigan. I can't wait to be a part of, you know, calling the games.
So what is it that you believe you can bring to the broadcast on Saturdays? And I started this off because Jim and Dan, both offensive linemen, I'm an offensive lineman, Jack Miller, who's going to be a part of our team moving forward, offensive lineman. Like, we have so many offensive linemen talking about Michigan football. Obviously, you were a great receiver here, great receiver in the NFL. What type of perspective, what are we missing as offensive linemen that our listeners need to know about on Saturdays?
Well, there's a bunch, you know. We're the prima donnas out there, wide receivers. We're going to give you that type. No, I'm just joking. But you have to be able to understand coverage, and you have to understand what you're looking at from a quarterback perspective. I was blessed enough to always be like the emergency quarterback. So I had to be in quarterback film meeting rooms a lot. So understanding it from, you know, the defensive backfield's perspective, understanding what quarterbacks are thinking about, understand what the cornerback and the defensive coordinator is trying to do from a coverage standpoint. I'm going to be able to pinpoint that and let you guys know what's the likelihood of this succeeding based on this coverage, or who's going to be able to have a good game with the corners, or, you know, that type of thing in the back end. That's what I look at a bunch. Offensive line play, I understand it a bit, but I'm more on the back end of it, and I can be able to recognize the coverage and understand what they're doing from that perspective. So if you guys aren't looking at that, that's what I'll be doing.
Okay, so I'm gonna throw you a curveball here, because we lost Dax Hill, we lost a number of guys in the secondary, but we also have guys like, you know, with a lot of expectations coming in, like a Will Johnson at corner, five-star kid, a legacy at Michigan. Everybody has high hopes. And it's early in camp, right? They've only had four practices, five by the time people hear this. What do you know so far about Michigan's secondary? We'll talk about the receivers in a minute, but about Michigan's secondary that leads you to believe that, hey, you lost Dax Hill, but you've got some other guys that are ready to step in and play.
Well, I'll answer that in a blank because I'm still preparing, still getting, because I've been doing NFL things a bunch. Yeah. So I'm still preparing and getting everything together as far as understanding what I'm looking at. But I will say this is that Michigan structurally, even from last year, it wasn't just about Dax Hill. It wasn't just about the guys that were there. It was more so a system that was implemented there. And I think that system will continue to go because if you have the talent in order to play man coverage, you're only going to expand with these young guys to be able to run exotic zones. And I think with the Baltimore Ravens, which our defensive coordinator has come from, that's a very, very dynamic, a very, very dynamic defense that can play all forms of coverage. And we have the pass rush. We have some guys up front that can generate that. So if you can get into some disguise coverage and those types of things, I think that is going to alleviate the man. We just got, you know, manhandled when it came to Georgia. We don't have the athletes to play man to man. So going forward, being able to get to some of those exotic zones, I think that's going to be the key for our success because we're not going to always be able to out athlete people like we were last year. So I think that's going to be the key going forward.
Now, flipping over to the receiver side, and I'm not going to ask you about personnel, but other than one guy, and you've already mentioned him, Ronnie Bell.
Yeah.
How difficult is it for a wide receiver to come off the injury that he had? Now, I know it's different now than it was 20, 25 years ago when I played. You know, the medical procedures, the rehab, everything is so much better. What is he going to be going through in training camp as he tests out that knee and tries to get back on the field?
I don't think it'll be a problem at all. I know Ronnie personally, we have conversations and I don't think it'll be a problem for him at all. He has the desire and he has the heart and he's put in the work. Any injury, you know, lower extremity in this time and in this day can be, you know, rehabbed in a 6-month period. And we're over that time range. Right. So I think that him having the experience of playing so many games only is going to boost this receiver core and having him there. We saw the game that he had, what, you know, his first game before he got hurt, the game that he was having. So if it can be 80% of that, we're looking good as far as Wolverine football. So I think that he's going to come back and have an outstanding year. And I don't think that, you know, him having an entire year, 8 months, almost 12 months by the time, you know, the season kicks around, you won't notice that he was injured before just because of the level of training that occurs now and the level of rehab. It's unbelievable. I remember having an ACL injury and being able to recover in about 5 months, you know, so and being able to run full speed coming out of high school, the University of Michigan. No one knew that I had an ACL, but I did. And it's because of the level of trainers. And that's 20 years ago.
So let's go back to, you know, I know you're living in Philly right now. You spent a long time with the Eagles, but your roots are in Chicago. Take us back to when you made that decision to go to the University of Michigan. What went into the decision? What was the recruiting process like for you and why Michigan?
Oh my gosh, that's a long way back. But I will say this. I will say that, I was a basketball player through and through, city of Chicago, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen. No one wanted to play football. Everyone wanted to play basketball. My basketball coach, because we went to a school that was underfunded, was also the football coach. He said, you can't play basketball for me unless you play football. So we were forced to go out and play. I didn't start playing football until I was a sophomore in high school. Sophomore high school put me at middle linebacker, lines me up, one-on-one isolation drills, full back, knocked me down 10 straight times, pancaked me. I quit. Your mama, I leave the football field. Right? So my grandmother and my dad talked me into going back out. They changed my position, running back, receiver. A couple years of playing, I was like the number one player in the state of Illinois just by, you know, rebounding, understanding how to make people move out of their spot from being a point guard. It just came very naturally. And at that time, I didn't know much about football, but I remember what I thought then was a blue and gold jersey. I didn't know about maize and blue, but blue and gold jersey, number two jersey with a rose in his mouth. That's the only thing I knew about college football because I didn't watch it, right? So this is kind of funny. I watched the NFL because New Jerry Rice and you know, my favorite receiver back in the day was Wes Slaughter. But I didn't know much about college football, so I remembered that. And when they began to recruit me, when Michigan began to recruit me, it kind of resonated. Oh, that was University of Michigan. And then I began to realize that they were ranked really high when it comes to academics. They were like the third rated school in the country as far as public universities academically. They were always a top 10 team in football. And I love the fact that, you know, there were going to be other guys, you know, there that can push me, you know, the Braylon Edwards, Steve Breston, other guys like that, Ron Bellamy at the time. I knew that they would push me, and I like that. I like the competition. So that's why I chose University of Michigan. There was I could have went anywhere I wanted. And a lot of schools' pitch was, we don't have many guys like you. And that turned me off. I'm like, dude, I want to be around guys that are like me, and I want to prove that I'm better than them. So that's what kind of sold me at the University of Michigan, was academics, great program, and then the ability to compete with the best in the country to see where I stack.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, because with NIL, with the transfer portal, with everything that's going on in college football right now, there's not many people talking about the academic side of things and graduating. Do you still believe that, like you, when you were coming out of Chicago, you mentioned that you wanted to go to a school that had great academics. Do you still believe that kids value, when they pick a school, that there is still importance in the education that they're going to get?
100%. Now, will this modern day kid, you know, value that or you know, want that? I think it all depends on the parenting, right? So if the parenting is solid and, you know, they're, you know, emphasizing the importance of education, that kid is going to consider that highly. But it's hard when you're throwing out the deals that these kids are getting now. You know, you're talking about $1 million deals, $700,000 deals. That's a lot of money to turn down. So I get it from their perspective, but the University of Michigan has the largest alumni base. I've gone to maybe 30 offices, you know, throughout the country that are pretty much all Michigan. And people are there because, you know, of who they know, and they're making, you know, substantial change and also making a lot of money. So I think that the education portion of it can set you up for the rest of your life, because as soon as someone hears the University of Michigan, that's a doorway in and into a field that you want. And that's how I got into the entertainment business. I had three facilities, and I knew a guy that went to University of Michigan that was in the entertainment business, and I wanted to be in the amusement entertainment business. So I called him. He let me shadow him for multiple years before I was comfortable with it. And I wouldn't have had that unless I went to University of Michigan. And it's weird how that works. I got, you know, a couple of, you know, teammates of mine that are on their way to, you know, being possibly a, you know, billionaires because they went to University of Michigan and they know who they know. And it's been a great thing.
When you were presented with the opportunity to come back and be a part of the radio crew, what went into your decision? Because you're a busy, busy man. Why take an entire day, but not just an entire day? It's traveling in, it's doing the game, it's the prep all week long. Why did you want to be a part of our radio team?
Well, I'll tell you this, and I'm going to break it down in a story type of form. I remember coming to the University of Michigan, and I was pissed. The first game we played Washington, and they were rated really high. They had Reggie Williams. We had Marlon Jackson. It was a pretty big game. It's the game that Phil Brabs kicked the long field goal in order to win. And I remember sitting on the sideline pissed that I wasn't playing. I was mad at everybody. I was transferring right after the game. And Steve Breston would come over to me and, hey, Jason, get in the game, man. It's not about you. I'm like, man, shut up, right? Right. So second quarter goes by. Go! Blue! Game's going on without me. Everyone's having a great time. The team is a great game going back and forth. I'm still on the sideline pissed, right? Third quarter rolls around. In the third quarter, I'm realizing that life is going on, you know, without me. And I finally got up and I begin to realize at that moment that life isn't about you. And it's all about winning for Michigan and winning for the team and the guys around you. And it kind of changed my perspective in life. And in that moment, I stopped counting catches. In that moment, I stopped counting, you know, how many touchdowns I got. And I would do whatever I could in order to help advance the agenda of the team. And it changed my life. And it changed the way that I view things. And it changed my approach. So when they presented me the opportunity to come back, I felt a sense of accomplishment, but also just the the just humble to be a part of this and be a part of the university that kind of changed my life. So it was very, very special and important to me.
When you look back over your career just at Michigan, give us one of your favorite moments of being a Wolverine and playing football at Michigan.
Oh man. Over my career, I would say it would have to be beating Ohio State. I remember getting knocked out of the game on a dirty play my sophomore year, and we were in Ann Arbor. And I remember Carl Tabb, that's the name for anybody there, for Ann Arbor kid, coming in the game in my place and catching two big third downs and us winning and going to the Rose Bowl. That was probably my favorite memory. But there's a bunch of them just from, you know, talking it up in the locker room, you know, the banner that goes on. Those are the things that you miss. I don't miss getting hit. I don't miss going over to the middle. I don't miss sitting in meetings and them babysitting us for 12 hours a day. I don't miss that. I miss the conversations. I miss the brotherhood. I miss the camaraderie. And so those, I would say that moment beating Ohio State, but also the moments of us just sitting around a locker room, just talking about life.
Well, I can't wait to hear more of those stories from the sidelines. Your perspective is certainly going to be unique, and it's something that that is going to create great value in our broadcast. So I want to be the first to I'm probably not the first, but welcome back to the family. Welcome back to the team. I can't wait for football Saturdays, and I can't wait to see you. Thanks for joining me.
No problem, John.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Well, from 2011 to 2014, the offensive line was anchored by one Jack Miller, and he's joining me now. And the reason he's joining me is because he will now be a member of our radio broadcast team. You're going to hear him on the pregames, halftime, postgame, all Saturday long. Jack, thanks for joining me, and welcome to the team.
Yeah, thanks, John. I'm fired up to be here. It's great to be back in Ann Arbor and with the Maize and Blue.
And we're very glad to have you back north of the border,
yeah,
because I know you're originally from Toledo. You've been doing radio for the Toledo football program for the past 3 years. How did you get into the radio business?
Yeah, well, I really just kind of stumbled into it. So when I was done at Michigan, I coached for a season at the University of Toledo. I was a graduate assistant there. I got out of that, and I, on the side down there, was working for a small, well, the cable company down there has their own station that essentially is like ESPN for high school sports, and they cover some college and pro, but they really focus on, you know, youth sports, high school sports. So I was broadcasting some games for them, and the summer after I was done coaching, the athletic director, Mike O'Brien at Toledo, came up to me and said, "Hey, Jack, you know, I see you do some of these games. Would you be interested in being our color analyst?" And I said, "Yeah, that'd be great. What a fun way to stay around it and just a really neat opportunity to be close to football still." So did that for 3 seasons. And when I started that, I always knew, boy, if I could ever get up to Michigan and have a role there to do that, that'd be incredible, right? And so, you know, in the back of my head, I always thought, what it might take to get back to Ann Arbor. And then with the shakeup this year with Dan and Jim retiring and some pieces getting moved around, was lucky enough, fortunate enough to have the opportunity to come home.
So why radio and not stay with the coaching profession?
Well, I like the fact that now, you know, we get to sit in our ivory tower and just judge everybody else's decisions, right? You know, I mean, win, lose, or draw, obviously there's an emotional attachment to it, but win, lose, or draw, you know, we go home at night and have a Sunday afterwards, right? And that grind of coaching, which it is, right? You wake up, you could have the greatest win in the world, and you wake up the next day pulling out your hair thinking, how are we going to do it again, right? And so I liked, you know, I had ventures, I guess, outside of coaching and the business world that I've been involved in and things like that. So this was a fun way to kind of get my fix and stay close to the game without really having to give my life to the game.
So what are some of the other ventures that you're in? Because I know everybody thinks that, 12 Saturdays out of the year is what puts the bacon on the table, but that's not always the case. So what else do you do?
Yeah, so when I was doing the radio in Toledo, I started working for a company called the Highland Group. So it's a large insurance brokerage, family-owned, so feels like a small business, but one of the largest brokers in the country. I was working in sales production down there, and then about a year and a half ago, they sent me up here to run our Detroit office. So I'm the president of the Detroit office for Highland Group Insurance. So that's day-to-day. That's what pays the bills. This is just the fun stuff on the side.
It is, and I tell you what, you're going to absolutely love it. It's going around all the Big Ten campuses, and it's expanding. We'll have some West Coast trips. I want to get your thoughts on some of those in just a little bit, but take us back to Jack Miller as a player. You grew up in Toledo.
Right.
Came north of the border for your education and football experience. What drew you to Michigan? And tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah. Got recruited. And again, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, I knew I was lucky enough. I had enough guidance in my life to know, hey, if you're going to be able to go to school for free, and, you know, I got pretty good grades in school, you're going to go to a great university, right? You're going to set up the rest of your life with this thing, because football ends no matter how great you are, no matter how far you go. That comes to an end, and you got to have something else, right? So being from Toledo, Ann Arbor's 45 minutes up the road. I mean, it was funny. When I was in school, a lot of people from Greater Detroit be like, oh, you're from Ohio. What's that, a couple hours away? And door to door, I was closer than most kids from Greater Detroit are to Ann Arbor. So it was just easy, right? It was close to home, but Ann Arbor is a different town than Toledo, Ohio is. So it felt, you know, like I had gotten away and it was something new. The educational piece, Ann Arbor's a fun town. And then, look, it was, you know, we are the most winningest football program in history, right? So you put all those three things together, it was a fairly easy decision to come up, to Michigan. But I got recruited out of high school to play offensive line, defensive line. So it really wasn't about the position, and it really wasn't about the coaches. I actually got recruited by Rich Rod's staff and Rich Rod, and then they made that change. Coach Hoke came in. So it wasn't even about coaches. It wasn't about the position. It was that I wanted to be at Michigan and, was able to live that out my 4 years, played a decent amount of ball, and, got my degree and moved on.
So we always talk about and hear a lot of stories about, coaches coming and going, and you were in the midst of coming up here as a freshman, and you get a new coach. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of the unknown. But like I said, even through the recruiting process, and this is no, disrespect to that staff or to Coach Rodriguez, but I wasn't coming to Michigan because of them, right? I was coming here because of what Michigan, is and was then. So it was honestly, there was a lot of hype, right? When you get a new coach and what's that going to be and how's that going to change things? And, my freshman year, we ended up going to the Sugar Bowl and winning that. So there was a lot of, some unknown, but it wasn't necessarily scary. I think it was, everyone looked at it as an opportunity. We all know, it didn't work. Coach Hoke had his 4 years and then was out. But at the time it was something refreshing. It was kind of that old school Michigan is back, right? That's what everyone kind of pegged that as at the time. Mm-hmm.
Throughout your career, now I know you redshirted like a lot of us did as freshmen. What was that year like for you coming from high school where you're offensive and defensive lineman, you pretty much never leave the field?
Yeah, right.
And then all of a sudden you come to Michigan and you're one of 120 guys just trying to find your way.
Yeah. difficult, right? And even with a lot of good guidance in my life and family, friends that have been longtime college and pro coaches and just a lot of people looking out for me to tell me what the experience is going to be like, until you live it, you don't really understand. And, you know, you come in, you know, you're a big man on campus in high school, you get to a Michigan, and you're an 18-year-old kid trying to play offensive line, you know, playing in the trenches against 22-year-old men, right? And my freshman year, that was Dave Molk's senior year. So he wins the Remington, he's the best center in the country, freak of nature physically. And the nose guard, who I was, you know, fortunate enough to block when I was on scout team, was Mike Martin, also a freak of nature physically. I mean, watching those two go out in practice was like, you know, watching two silverback gorillas try to fight each other, right? It was a different level, right? And so, you know, there was a lot of getting beat up. There was a lot of figuring it out. You know, that new staff that came in with Coach Hoke, they were very much, you know, very regiment and very, you know, you're going to show up and be accountable, be tough, be disciplined. And so, you know, it was eye-opening for a while, right? But it you know, it shaped you, right? And it makes you who you are. And that year it worked in particular. Like I said, we ended up winning the Sugar Bowl and all that. So the year ended on a really high note. But there were some lows in there too, for sure. But, you know, an incredible experience.
What do you take when you talk about your experience now, having looked back now, it's, what, 7 years, mm-hmm. 8 years since you graduated?
Yeah. Jeez.
What did you take? First of all, yeah, time flies, doesn't
yeah,
it?
All yeah, all of a sudden, right?
Wait till you're getting ready for a 25-year reunion. What did you take away from this program? What did the program teach you?
Well, I think just how to, you know, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but that whole Michigan man idea, right, of you're going to do things the right way, you're going to be a good person, you're going to be accountable, whether that's to the people that you work with, to your family, to your friends, you know, you're going to do things in a way that's, you know, full of class and at a high end. You know, there's no shortcuts, right? You're going to work hard. You're going to try to embody all the things that make successful people as you look at it overall. And that just gets drilled into you from day one on campus in Ann Arbor, right? I mean, it's, you know, we talk about all the time, particularly now in this new era of college football, you know, how important is school to a lot of student athletes? Well, I can tell you Coach Harbaugh and the staff, they're still pushing that, right? And those guys are going to class and they're there for an education and they're there for a transformational experience, not just, you know, to show up and play football and get to be able to play on Sundays, which, you know, probably a lot of other programs are pushing right now. So, you know, it's about rounding out the whole of the individual. And, you know, at least when I was there from your time there, from all the way back, it's done a tremendous job of doing that for everyone.
And I mean, you mentioned we get to sit on our ivory tower and judge everything that goes on in the field, right, everything that goes on in the program. And I say judge, but we get a chance to talk about it. We get a chance to bring it to the fans of Michigan football, whether they're alumni or just fans of the program. We will also now, because this is our first experience getting a chance to talk to you and our fans, we'll get a chance to judge you. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about certain topics like NIL, the transfer portal, the expansion of what is the Big Ten now that it's going to have USC and UCLA, we're going to very much critique your answers. I say that jokingly, but when you look at where college football is right now, having taken into account all of those, first, you only played 8 years ago. How different is college football now? How much has it changed in the last decade?
A tremendous amount. I mean, I think light years compared to certain eras, right, when you look back at them. Like, I was just having this conversation with somebody yesterday. When I was finishing up, so 14, you know, graduating 15, nutrition was just starting to become like, hey, this is really important, guys. And the idea of rest and recovery and not let's just beat each other down all the time, because in football you got to be tough, so let's just let's keep going harder, let's keep going more. It was like, wait a minute, maybe less is more now, right? I mean, things like that were just starting to happen. Then you factor into that everything that's happened with NIL, right, and what's going to come from that. I think we're just, you know, just getting into that, whatever that's going to look like. It's incredibly different. And some of it, I would say actually the vast majority of it should be so, right? I think the game and the system was due for a change for a long time probably. Is it necessarily unfolding the exact way it should? Maybe not. But the intentions behind it, I think, are probably in the right place. And I think it is going to change the game for the better, hopefully. You know, the game itself has changed, right? I mean, since you played, like, go watch offense and defensive lines play, right? And it's not the brutal, let me just try to run through somebody that used to be. It's so skilled. It's so fast. It's so technical.
You saying you weren't skilled or fast?
Not like they are now. I could say, man, I wasn't. Hurts. I wasn't, at least. You might have been. But no, I mean, everything has changed about the game.
Yeah.
And I think they've done a good job keeping it so that the tradition and the roots of it are still there, because that's the one thing college football has that no other sport at no other level has, is that emotional connection to it that people have, the pageantry behind it, the traditions behind it. You know, that doesn't exist anywhere else. And so as long as they can keep that stuff around, I think the sport will be in good shape for a long time, but it certainly is evolving.
Yeah, and you talk about traditions that are part of what makes college football great, the rivalries, the traditions. Some of those are even changing, mm-hmm. because now we're going to, in 2 years, we're going to have teams on the West Coast,
yeah.
as part of the Big Ten. I mean, we're going to go all the way from Rutgers all the way out to L.A. and have those two schools be a part of the Big Ten. Where do you see college football conference expansion going?
Well, I think it's, at this point, it's kind of pigeonholed itself into these mega conferences, right? So it's going to be the Big Ten and the SEC, and then there's got to be this third guy that's hanging around, right? Those Big 12 schools and maybe some of the other schools from those conferences that necessarily didn't get picked up. You know, it's interesting. I think that these conferences have started to kind of realize that they're running the show now more than the NCAA is, and especially the way the NCAA backed off all this NIL stuff and just kind of created the wild, wild west, said go do what you want to do. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think back to when I was playing, the Rose Bowl was such a big thing, right? That was where you wanted to end up. And then right around when I was playing, it was like, hey, you can have the greatest season in the world. You're not going to the Rose Bowl, right? So all that tradition behind that had started to go away. So yeah, some of these rivalries, what's going to happen with that? What's, you know, the schedule of college football is going to look vastly different. We know that bowl games over the last few years, right, between guys sitting out and how many there are and the way the conferences align in them, that has certainly changed. So we are in, I think, a big period of change for the sport. But as long as those schools, you know, it's driven by the top ones, right? And as long as the big guys out there can stay true to who they are, and you know, Ohio State and Michigan's never going away, right? Auburn and Alabama's never going away, and you know, Texas, Oklahoma, things like that, right? That are just a core tenet of college football. As long as some of those and the majority of those stay around, I think the sport's in a good shape. But it's got to change, and unfortunately, I think it was overdue for this, and it's been probably the overreaction to a, you know, hey, these guys should have been getting a little more money, and everyone should have been a little happier together for a long time, and then it just got to a point where it's, you know, just total chaos. Right,
yes,
now.
The dam burst.
Yes, exactly.
And so let's bring it back to Michigan football and this football season. There's a lot of change.
Yeah.
You know, we got a new defensive coordinator, two new offensive coordinators. Obviously, defensively, no more Ojabo, no more Hutchinson, no more Ross. I mean, you go right in Dax Hill. What do you expect from this version of Michigan football?
Yeah, I do think that there's, you know, there are question marks out there. I think they're good problems to have, right? I mean, you lose star players, good problem to have, right? You know, you lose great coaches, okay, that's okay, you know, okay as well. You know, I think that, what do they always say in the beginning of the season? You can tell a lot about a team going from week one to week two. Mm-hmm. I think that that's fair to say about Michigan as a program this year, right? It kind of felt like last year was a restart. Year one, okay, we're back on track. We got some of this stuff figured out. What's it going to look like in year two? You got to evolve. You got to be different. There are, from what I can gather, and I'd like to get to a few practices this fall and get out there more and start to evaluate the team in more depth, but from what I can tell, there's a lot of talent running around the field. There's talent everywhere, and it seems to be deep. And I truly believe it's very well coached. I think the biggest question mark in my mind is who's the next leader, right? Who's the next Aiden Hutchinson?
You talk like such an offensive lineman.
Well, that's why we're sitting in these chairs.
Yes.
But no, who's the next guy? Who's going to step up, right? Is it Ronnie Bell? Does he come back and have an incredible year after that injury? And he's the face of it, and he leads the team. You know, the quarterback situation, does one of those guys just evolve? And it's, hey, it's their gig, and it's their team and their locker room, and they're running with it. Is it a Nazi Smith, right? Is it who is it who's going to really show up, kind of be the vocal face of the team. Because every team's got to have that guy. And I think right now maybe that's what they're trying to sort out. That's what fall camp's for. So I think there's a lot of talent. I think it's deep. And, you know, if the coaches do a great job utilizing the talent the way they did last year, I think it's going to be an exciting season. I really do. It'd be fun to watch.
So last question before we let you go. I know that for me, and I'm sure it is the same for you, all roads lead back to Ann Arbor. The first game against Colorado State, mm-hmm. You're going to be a little bit nervous about that first pregame show, the halftime hit, because yeah. It'll all be timed. There's going to be somebody in your ear saying, hey, don't go too long.
Yeah.
Don't, but don't leave us hanging.
No, you know, it that is the fun part about this gig, right? Is yeah. that, you know, you got to show up, right? You got to, you know, be on your game, and you got to study. You got to know what you're talking about coming into it. And then you got to go perform, right? And that's the fun part. So yeah, there'll probably be a little bit of butterflies for the first one and back in Ann Arbor and getting set up with the new team and everything like that, you know, but I'm fired up about it. I'm really looking forward to the season and working with you guys. I think it's going
to
be awesome.
Well, Jack, welcome to the team. Yeah, I'm excited to have you. I know everybody else is, and I know our listeners are going to be very excited to hear what you bring to the team and to the broadcast on Saturdays.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, I want to say special thanks to Jack Miller and Jason Avant, both new members of our radio team. I can't wait for the broadcast. We've always had a great broadcast. I think those two guys are going to add so much to what we're doing, what we can offer the fans and the listeners. They will also be a part, obviously, when we recap everything post-game. We've got a podcast that comes out. They'll be a large part of that, and throughout the week we'll have them involved as well. So thanks to those two guys of giving of their time and coming back to Michigan. So for all your Michigan football information, as we continue to travel throughout training camp, we're going to bring you more players, we're going to bring you more coaches, and everything that has to do with Michigan football leading up to this 2022 football season right here on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen, presented by Meijer, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network, MGO Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.